Joining us on a Monday for the Supply Chain Leader Learning Series call. My name is Alicia O'Donnell with MDSI and ANAE, and I will be the moderator for today's call. Today we welcome Christopher O'Connor, Executive Vice President of the Greater New York Hospital Association Ventures. Joining him is John Pritchard, the publisher of the Journal of Healthcare Contracting and the President of ANAE. As we go through the call today, please feel free to submit any questions that you have to me via the chat window, and after this discussion today, if time permits, we'll try to address those questions. I want to thank everybody again for joining us, and I'll now turn things over to John Pritchard.
Great. Thank you, Alicia. Welcome, Chris. I appreciate you being here today.
Thank you so much for having me.
If you would, could you just kind of give us an overview of your organization? I know we've written on you a number of times, and you've always been very generous with your time, but if you could kind of give our listeners an overview of the organization, that'd be a great place to start.
Sure. So I guess I work at a relatively complex organization that has a very simple mission. So our parent corp is the Greater New York Hospital Association, which is a hospital trade association that is about 110 years old. And it's predominantly based in New York, as our name would suggest, but we also have members that are in New Jersey and Connecticut and Rhode Island, and we're connected to hospitals in Puerto Rico. And the focus of the association is to do a couple of things. It's to do public policy work and advocacy work on behalf of our member hospitals. That include both acute care hospitals as well as long-term care facilities. So that's sort of at the top of the food chain is the association. But the association a number of years ago, probably almost 30 years ago now, developed businesses. So we've got this not-for-profit parent that develops for-profit entities to help fund all of the great work of the association. And two of the businesses that are really subsidiaries to this not-for-profit are organizations that I work within, and one is called GNYHA Services, and that is a regional GPO that has about $5 billion or so in contract volume. And again, we work with hospitals in the areas that I had covered just a bit ago. And then the other company that that I work with is Nexera. And Nexera is a consulting company. So much like, you know, other sort of large consulting companies. And we do project type work, and we do outsourcing, or what we call management services, where we work with our hospitals to not only to become more efficient, to help them improve their quality of care, but around 70% of our work or so is somehow connected to the supply chain, whether we are managing it with people within the facilities or on a project-based initiatives outside of the facilities. So the two companies, again, that I work with are GNYHA Services, the GPO, and then Nexera.
Got it. And then just to go a little bit deeper, the services side, a regional GPO, $5 billion in contracted throughput. Can you give us a feel for how many hospitals that comprises and just kind of the size of it?
Yeah. So again, it runs the gamut. It's a couple hundred hospitals, and always defining what's a hospital, becomes more and more challenging, because we have the large and the small. So we, as of today, I guess we have the largest hospital in New York, which is now the Mount Sinai Health System, which just merged, which was the old Mount Sinai Hospital and Continuum Health Partners. And then we also have smaller community type hospitals, but it's a couple hundred hospitals that are within our membership, and actually some that are strictly clients of ours and sit outside of the membership. And I guess I would be remiss if I didn't say is, so we're a regional GPO, as I mentioned, but we work collaboratively with Premier nationally.
Interesting. Yeah, you know, I was going to ask you what's unique about your organization, but a lot of things are. It seems like I can't think of another organization that's similar that's kind of butted out of a hospital association with advocacy and policy at the heart of it, but then finding other ways to fuel that. So that's interesting. So with NextEra and the consulting company, I would think the management services is the main gist of that. Outsource, you know, hoping a hospital or health system would outsource the supply chain function, or are there other parts of the organization that you guys handle as well?
Well, so interestingly, so in almost every management services, as we refer to it, account, which by the way are both acute care and non-acute care, so we're both in hospitals and in facilities that are not hospitals, it seems that it always begins with a supply chain type contract. So that could be sort of the full-blown sort of soup to nuts supply chain, where we have procurement and distribution and OR materials, et cetera. Or it could be a subset of the supply chain, so it could be just value analysis as a standalone. And then also sometimes a facility is just looking for us to put in the vice president for supply chain, and then they keep all of their own staff. What has honestly been fascinating, and I've been here for, it's just over 10 years, is that although it typically starts with one component of the supply chain, it typically radiates into other parts of the organization. So our contracts sometimes extended, it'll include things like transportation or plant ops or maintenance. We've done central sterile supply. We have food nutrition services. We have environmental services. So all those sort of back of the house type functions that, as the hospitals see that that we are bringing value to them as they have other needs, they sometimes look to us to help to bring value in other areas as well. But I'll tell you, it's very simple in a way. So with our parents being this not-for-profit public policy advocacy organization, our mantra is always what is in the best interest of our clients or of our hospitals, and since we always put our hospitals and our long-term care facilities and other entities first, it makes it very easy to do the right thing because it's much more than just a sort of a client-consultant relationship. It's so much more and so much deeper than that.
Yeah, it's interesting too. I would think the needs or the urgency of that area you're servicing would be pretty congruent, but also drastically different than other corners of the nation, if you will. I think of the Northeast with aging plant and equipment, and dense populations and things like that. I would think the hospitals and health systems that are customers or clients of yours might not have great peripheral view on how other best practices are happening. I would think NextEra would be a great opportunity to kind of drive some of those best practices you learn at one place, you know, to another organization to their benefit.
Oh, no question. But John, when you mentioned that, so the Northeast is sort of so different. What's interesting is that what would have come to mind a year ago in terms of that comment is different than what comes to mind today, because when you said, oh, the Northeast is so different, my mind immediately went to last year, this month actually, to Hurricane Sandy, and sort of the how that really rocked this area in a way that no natural disaster really had in the past, and how that sort of the healthcare community in New York and New Jersey really had to band together to take care of the healthcare needs of this population with very few resources. And that's also sort of different from our vantage point as well, is because even though, yeah, so we've got this GPO, so you'd think, oh, they must just do contracting, and we do. But we do so much more than that when there is a need. So for Hurricane Sandy, like we sat and we had, I don't know, 20, 25 people at a time at the Office of Emergency Management, which is in Brooklyn for the five boroughs. And we ensured that our hospitals got the right resources and supplies and fuel and trucks and sort of you name it that they needed. So you might think, well, gosh, this falls so far outside of what a traditional GPO or consultant company would do. And you're right. But it's sort of a perfect example of how, well, we're not just a GPO or we're not just a consulting company. We are here to, and really tied at the hip with our customers, our members, our clients, however you like to refer to them, that we serve.
Interesting. Tell me, so you kind of wear, you're certainly wearing two hats of leadership, one with the services in the GPO business and then one with the management services part of the organization. Could you go through both of those and give me, kind of what are your top priorities that you're driving both of those initiatives with here in late 2013?
Yeah, so from the GPO perspective, I guess I'll start with sort of a probably what people want to hear sort of on the contracting side, right? And so we are truly, when I say we, it's not only our organization, but it's our acute and non-acute care members are really trying to get a handle on purchase services. It's an area that is complicated, that we think that there's still tremendous value to be obtained within purchase services, and it's much more complicated than doing a contract for a commodity. So we're spending a tremendous amount of time, I mean, taking a look at things like blood procurement, blood utilization, temporary staffing, security, IT, even like elevator maintenance type contracts. So we're really trying to get a handle, not only as an organization, but as a healthcare community around purchased services. I mentioned emergency preparedness, but that very much stays on our radar screen, especially since we're sort of in the season right now for hurricanes, et cetera. But the biggest priority needs to be, and I'm sure it's no different here than elsewhere around the country, is our hospitals are preparing for health reform and figuring out how to make sure that they are not only addressing and continuing to address the quality needs and the quality demands that will come from health reform, but also taking a look at the realities around reimbursement and making sure that they don't lose reimbursement while at the same time improving the quality of care to the patients. And they're obviously doing that all in the context of that reimbursement is changing, and it's going to be changing really pretty rapidly, especially when you take a look at, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, and then the commercial, which always typically, you know, follows CMS anyway with pretty rapid fire.
It's interesting, you know, the changing reimbursement landscape that we're literally preparing for, or hospitals are preparing for, in the next, you know, few months, and Main Street's going to see in the next few days. Have you seen added pressure by the commercial payers or even employers getting involved with your hospitals or your clients in changing the way they're negotiating and measuring cost, quality, and patient experience as a component of how they're going to pay the hospitals? I mean, we know how it's going to happen for Medicare, Medicaid. I should say we know. We think we know. But I'd be real curious if, in your area or from what you're hearing and working with your customers, if you're hearing employers and commercial payers changing those rules and mimicking, if you will, the cost, quality, patient experience model that we're seeing with the Affordable Care Act.
Well, so what I do know is that if we take a look at history, that will absolutely happen. But just looking back just on at history, typically you'll see the full implementation from CMS before the commercial payers sort of jump on board and start to mimic it or mirror it, if you will. So I probably best not to comment on sort of what I'm hearing from the commercial landscape, but if history is any indication of the future, then that absolutely will be following pretty quickly.
Have you done any specific initiatives or preparation for healthcare reform? I'm sure you have, but is there anything you could speak to specifically, you know, around for your customers around hospitals and health systems to prepare for this new landscape?
Yeah, well, I mean, if anyone has, I feel like any time I've spoken in the last year, I always sort of weave into, and it's something that ARM has also sort of taken on, sort of this movement of that supply chain needs to find and own this intersection of cost, quality, which is patient care, patient experience, et cetera, and then outcomes, which are financial outcomes or reimbursement. So it's finding that intersection of cost, quality, and outcomes, and the supply chain needing to be really at the epicenter of that. But when I say supply chain, it's not just the materials executives in a hospital or in a long-term care facility or a freestanding lab or imaging center that need to find that intersection. It's when I say supply chain, it's everyone that touches the supply chain. So, and I know there's a lot of obviously suppliers on this call. So it's suppliers as well. It's all of us together. So it's breaking down the old relationships that the supplier-hospital relationship is predominantly around price within a contract, and looking at, okay, so what is the total cost of ownership, or how do we look at supplies or services and figuring out a way together to improve the quality of care and the patient experience, so that the reimbursement to our hospitals can either increase or at least stay where it is today. So I think that sort of the old world of it being mostly about price is going away, and all of our hospitals, and not just my hospitals, but across the country, are all starting to look at that and figuring out ways to find that intersection, because it's going to be survival. It's really going to be survival.
No longer a luxury, is it?
Yeah, and you know what? It's sort of when I talk about this, it's sort of like, why weren't we doing this before? Well, I mean, the reason why we weren't doing this before is that, first of all, it wasn't the mandate before. And if you believe that supply chain typically follows reimbursement, well, it didn't. There wasn't the need or the mandate for this to happen. So we've been measuring quality, and you know, quality scores, etc., for a while now, but there wasn't a direct tie to a change, whether it be an increase or a decrease in reimbursement, you know, until now. So, you know, so if you look way, way back, so back when, you know, the hospitals were on a cost-plus basis, now this is going way back, well, then there wasn't any impetus, right, for hospitals to drive down the cost of supplies, because we followed reimbursement, it was cost-plus, right, and then we moved into DRGs, et cetera, and then there was a need to, you know, bring the pricing down. And then there was a greater need to not only continue to bring the pricing down, but to take a look at standardization and to take a look at utilization of supplies to drive waste out of the hospitals or the systems. So this is really just it's truly just an evolution of where we have been, even though people think, oh, health reform is more of this revolution. But in the supply chain arena, it really isn't. And it's sort of this natural progression. But I get it, that it's a big step. It's a big step. It's a change in the way we think about things. It's a change in the way we work with clinicians and other administrators, and certainly with suppliers and even with GPOs, that we all need to be, you know, to reinvent ourselves, be a little bit, you know, like a chameleon, and then come back and again keep our focus on the patient and improving the quality of care for the patient, because that's honestly where the goal of health reform.
Sure. If you could give me a success story. Well, you know, have you had some successful initiatives you could share?
Yeah. So I guess I'll give you from our hospital's perspective. So we have a lot of systems in New York that try to work very hard to be like systems, but it's always a challenge when you have multiple hospitals, right, working together. So just one example, sort of, I'm going to give you a couple relatively simple ones. So where we standardize within a system, the central line insertion kits. So we had worked with four suppliers. The volume was truly split amongst four different suppliers. They worked very collaboratively to identify, okay, what is a kit that will work across the entire system, and they were able to move to one supplier. But that's sort of not the end of the story, because the biggest issue is what they wanted to do was, so that was the beginning, that they wanted to standardize, but what they really wanted to do is that they wanted to reduce the CLABSI. So they wanted to reduce the central line associated bloodstream infections that were going on within the facility. So that was the true goal. And the standardization was, so this is a perfect example of that intersection of cost, quality, and outcomes. So the goal wasn't standardize the kits. The goal was to reduce the infection rate. And through the standardization of the kits, and the procedures, right, for using them, they were able to reduce the infection rate. So sort of a great example of a very differentiated way that supply chain is then working within the facilities. Because in the old days, standardizing the kit would have been the goal. That would have been, and if they saved money in standardizing the kit, that's what the materials exec would have taken to the CFO and shown her how much money was saved. But in the new world, yes, they want to reduce their total cost, but they need to take a look at the total cost. So how much does the CLABSI cost the facility, right, in terms of a longer length of stay, in terms of readmission, in terms of what have you. So it's the total cost of ownership, not just the cost of the supplies that are in a kit. Helpful?
That's a great example.
Well, but you know what? It's sort of, it's not a bad example, I guess, but we need to start to look at supply chain in so much broader terms than we ever have in the past.
Yeah, you know, kind of around the same subject, but maybe shifting gears a little bit to the supplier perspective of that same kind of initiative. You know, how do you ensure that, you know, your staff's ready to hear the message from suppliers when they have the ability to affect cost, quality, and outcome continuum, you know? Because I think a lot of major suppliers oftentimes feel like they have great ideas and proposals, but we all know how busy the day-to-day, you know, stress of doing our jobs is. I mean, what advice do you give to a supplier to make sure their message can be heard if they've got opportunities like the exact one you just portrayed?
So you know what's interesting is that, so as Aram sort of took on this movement of cost, quality, and outcomes in this past year, so I had the opportunity to talk to many, many, many people, and that included many suppliers. And it was interesting because at first I had this idea that I would have to start to convince suppliers that this was a good idea. That not just looking at price, but also taking a look at, you know, quality and then outcomes and building all of that into proposals and relationships with hospitals, that was going to be a challenge. And what's fascinating is that it wasn't a challenge at all. The easiest conversations that I had were with suppliers, believe it or not. And it sort of, you know, took me back, you know, to when I worked in a hospital, which was a fair amount of time ago. So there's always this rub, so it seems, between the supply chain executives and the suppliers. Because in the old world, the supply chain exec only wanted to talk about sort of one thing. And that's not the case anymore, but I'm just sort of giving a little history lesson. But that they wanted to talk about price. That's all they wanted to talk about. And the supplier, especially for sort of non-commodity type items, they want to talk about not just price, but they want to talk about the quality of their supplies or their service. So what happens is that I believe that suppliers, this sort of natural tension came because the suppliers would find the people that also wanted to talk about quality. So the suppliers would then do what they sort of needed to do to find people that wanted to talk about what they wanted to talk about. And that would be physicians, surgeons, other clinicians, nurses, et cetera. And then the supply chain execs would be sort of all ticked off that the suppliers went around them to talk about quality. But in the new world, everyone is going to be talking the same language. Everyone's going to still be focused on the price, but it's going to be the total price, but also going to be absolutely at the table when they talk about sort of the quality of care and how, whether it be a service or a supply, will improve the quality of care. And that's going to be great for the patient, but there's also a reality around reimbursement that it's going to be really just front and center. So if I sort of look into like a crystal ball in terms of the relationships between suppliers and hospitals, I think that they are going to be, I'm going to say the word improved, but that means that they might not be so great today, which I don't believe to be the case, but I think they're going to become even stronger going forward because both sides of the equation are going to need the relationships to be better. But I could also see a world where suppliers, maybe they would go at risk. Maybe they would go at risk for reducing, whether it be using my CLABSI example, reducing infection rate, or maybe reducing needle sticks, or maybe reducing, you know, what have you. So, and coming to the table and bringing resources to bear, and maybe there could be some shared risk. Maybe there could be upside for suppliers if infection rates were reduced significantly and more revenue came into the hospitals. I mean, it's sort of, you might think, wow, that's sort of a stretch, but it might not be. It might not be in the not too distant future. It could be an interesting scenario that really binds suppliers and hospitals together in a way that they have never been before. And especially if you take a look at, like,
not necessarily to name names, but, you know, I didn't know if you had any other, you know, tips, if you will, to suppliers and an example on a value proposition, if you will, that resonates well. Because, like you say, sometimes when that value is seen by the clinician, who maybe arguably 5 years ago or 3 years ago had the luxury maybe of having a little more preference than they do today. But I see suppliers needing to speak in today's speak to today's currency of cost, qualities, and outcomes. And I didn't know if you had any great advice to them on how to best articulate that value proposition. Is it to lead with things like decreasing length of stay and infections and so on and so forth? But I'm just kind of curious if you had a best advice for suppliers on how to best step up to the plate.
I do. I absolutely do. I think that, and it's not so complicated. I think that, and there are lots of different ways sort of to become educated on this, but I think that anyone that works in healthcare needs to have a good grasp of what is written in the Affordable Care Act. Now that's long, big, and ugly, but there are a lot of sort of synthesized versions of it. ARM has one, which, you know, if people are members of ARM, they can go on the ARM website and take a look at that. But that is the sort of the rule book going forward for the next bunch of years. And if you can lead with things that are in the Affordable Care Act that are going to impact the hospitals, both positively and potentially negatively, that is what's going to resonate. Because it's possible that not everyone in the hospital completely understands what's in the Affordable Care Act. Right? So knowing, okay, what are some never events? Meaning you are not going to get reimbursed. So if you know that, okay, patients that are readmitted within 30 days of being discharged, I'm oversimplifying this, you will not get paid for that second stay. Okay? That's not the case today. So if you have products or services that will help to reduce readmissions for particular patients that on average do get readmitted on a fairly regular basis, well, that is going to resonate. That's going to resonate all the way up, you know, to the CFO's office. And there are sort of countless examples.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, you know, understanding the Affordable Care Act, its intended and unintended consequences. I would also contend that the tenor of that is going to become more and more important literally in the next couple of weeks as the health exchanges are launched and Main Street starts to struggle with it, if you will, and just
That's
understanding
right.
it. So any professional, I think, in our channel, in our market that is conversational, I think is absolutely imperative to best articulate your value to hospitals and GPOs and stakeholders in the supply chain, both up and down.
Yeah, absolutely right. And the other thing that, I mean, although we keep talking about hospitals, there's if you take a look at just even going into next year, that we need to start to look across the continuum of care, because when you take a look at what healthcare is going to look like in the future, it's going to be sort of this really integrated network, and it's not just going to be the hospitals. We're going to take a look at, you know, when you look at population health, right? So how will we be treating patients? Because it's going to bind physicians, it's going to bind, you know, outpatient services, hospitals, etc. They will truly all be bound together in a way that historically wasn't the case. So it's not just about hospitals anymore.
Yeah, good point. You know, it seems you certainly have a lot of formal processes in place to measure the value you're providing your clients, but could you, just kind of staying in the weeds of supply chain, if you could talk a little bit about what quality, operational, or even clinical benchmarking tools you might use, you know, to really drive procedure and product standardization?
Yeah, so I'm probably not the best person to sort of ask that question, because we work very, very closely with our national partner Premier, which has just tremendous sort of quality tools and operational tools. And you know, so I obviously want to, you know, not just sort of give them a plug, because they are tremendous, but everyone needs to be, when I say everyone, hospitals, health systems, need to be using quality tools and operational tools to ensure that they are sort of getting best practice for them. And because benchmarks are great and they're directional, but then you have to implement. So, and different, every hospital comes at both clinical best practices and operational best practices from a different place. But so I guess my overarching is that you must, whether you're using tools from your GPO or tools that are not from your GPO, you need to be looking at sort of peer type data and ensure that you are truly moving forward and investing in your own facilities as it relates to IT, so that the clinical information can talk to your financial information, which unfortunately is not the case in many systems around the country, as well as looking at so what is happening to reimbursement, what is happening to your quality scores, as well as tying in your supply chain costs. And what's been problematic around the country is that all of these systems have typically been built in isolation, whether it's to look at quality or to look at financial data. And it's only the organizations around the country, and Premier just happens to be one, that's sort of tying them together, because that's what we're going to need to do going forward.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, with your work with ARM, or maybe even within those Premier tools, is there an industry accepted model for calculating total cost? You know, the real cost of a good outcome versus the real cost of a bad outcome, or I'm kind of curious if that's included in those benchmarking tools.
Part of it is a hospital will define sort of from their own how to capture what their total costs are. So it is a little bit different, and I don't believe that there's just a national benchmark, which is sort of the standard across the country for identifying, yes, this is the total cost, or this total cost will yield the following outcomes. And I actually don't think that we're going to get to a place where there is sort of just this one national standard for doing that either. I think it's different when you take a look at different parts of the country. I mean, we do. Predominant amount of teaching of residents sort of in the greater New York metropolitan area for the country, which alters our costs. Some places have unions, some places don't have unions. Some places are more expensive, not, you know, less expensive, different parts of the country. So identifying sort of a benchmark for costs for a nation as diverse as ours, I think is going to be challenging.
Yeah. All right, I want to get to a little bit, some more details on contracting, if you will, and I don't want you to be afraid to be too remedial here, because keep in mind, a lot of our listeners and memberships may have never called on you, may not even have handled Premier. So with you having your own GPO servicing that Northeast region you detailed, and also having a national GPO partner in Premier, you know, kind of simply put, how do you guide a supplier, you know, to get a GPO contract that your clients have access to? How do they go about doing that? They start with you, start with Premier. Is it a joint effort? But just whatever advice you could give or direction you'd give a supplier on how to get on contract to get access to your customers.
Sure. Well, I guess I'll attack it from both the regional and then also the national. So first and foremost, we are very transparent around both nationally and within Greater New York around our contracting process. So we very much, when we look at regional contracts, look to work with suppliers that can serve our marketplace. So they don't necessarily have to be the large national suppliers. We work with small suppliers sometimes, veteran-owned, women-owned, minority-owned suppliers. So that's a very big, big push for us. But it's to service our market. So all of our, when we look to get proposals for whether it's commodities or anything that we have in contract, it's all published on our website. So it's completely transparent. And anyone is welcome to submit submit proposals. So we have an open process. It's not that you have to be invited to submit. It's all absolutely publicly available. And we work with suppliers that are new to GPOs, et cetera, and we welcome that. And that's also true. That's also true for Premier. That is absolutely open, but it is a little bit different because when we look to do something in our marketplace, it's obviously sort of more for the Northeast. So sometimes it's easier for a Greater New York to work with a smaller supplier in a given commodity than a supplier that has to cover the entire nation. But very similar process, very open, very transparent, and we work with suppliers that have never connected with a GPO, never connected with them before, just to help them through the process. So if you take a look at sort of the contracting calendar, then people can see, okay, so what's going to be coming up, what's currently sort of on the docket to do a regional contract. And we have close to 500 regional contracts just in our marketplace. So what we do is that we again work with Premier nationally. So sometimes we will look to see, okay, so here is a given service line, if you will, that's not on contract. That's something that's more appropriate to be done on a regional basis, and then we will augment the national portfolio by doing that. Or it might be an area that if one of our hospitals have asked us to do an RFP for a very specific type of item, whether it be service or a supply, and then we will also sort of follow that same process, but it might be driven by our customers. We also very much, because we are regional, like to work with organizations that are also in our region. So right now we're sort of building a by New York portfolio of some products and services that are New York based, and we'll be doing that sort of throughout our region.
Great. So in a nutshell, check your website, get in tune with the bid schedules or the contract schedules. Stay in touch with Premier and follow both of those concurrent schedules. And also, it could be driven by hospitals' request for what they may want on contract. And if a supplier is up in your region, make sure you know that.
Yeah, exactly. And it's also, and just to underscore, and it's not like, well, if you've never worked with a GPO, then you probably shouldn't. If anything, we're happy to work with suppliers that haven't worked with the GPO, and they need to sort of be walked through the process. That happens all the time.
Yeah, and I think we'll see more of that as certain service providers start to want to do business healthcare's way too. I would think that would be a unique area you'll be able to work in regional suppliers. As we know, one of the big challenges with contracting for services is the varying cost to serve. If they have a plant doing laundry or providing medical gas or whatever it is, what they can quote you in contract for is greatly depending on where they're servicing you from. So I would think I think that would also add to the proliferation of organizations that are going to start contracting with you and other GPOs and organizations
that want to provide services in that area.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right.
One last question about purchase services. I probably should have asked it earlier when you had mentioned that. You know, could you give me a feel for what percentage is under contract now of that $5 billion? And then probably more importantly, where is that going to go? Will it be 50-50 in a few years, if ever? Or just give me a feel for the proportion.
It's probably, right now, it's probably under 10%.
Oh, it's a great opportunity, isn't it?
I'm sorry, say it again?
That's a great opportunity then, isn't it?
Well, we believe that it's a great opportunity. It's not, I would be shocked if it was, if it grew to, as you had said, a 50-50, you know, just in terms of a split. I certainly don't think that that's going to happen. And the reason why, there are a lot of things within a purchase services that are very hospital specific. So not everything really lends itself to the traditional GPO contract, but I think that there is a lot of value that can be brought to bear by using a GPO contract for purchased services. And John, actually, I should ask just a clarification. Did you say, well, what percentage is under a GPO contract, or what percentage do hospitals have on contract, whether it be their own or a GPO?
Your GPO, what percentage of that $5 billion roughly would you say is services versus all the other things you contract for?
Yeah. So my answer was correct. But if you look at it from a hospital standpoint, that a significantly higher amount is on a contract, but it might not be going through a GPO. But I think that both things or both areas are relevant, just in terms of helping hospitals to reduce their costs, getting it on a contract, and then if it can get on a GPO contract, then all the better.
Great, thank you. You know, before I lost my way and went back to purchase services, I wanted to kind of follow up with the theme of, hey, how do we get on a GPO contract to, you know, get our products and services access to your member clients? The next question would be, once we have that contract, either one of your regional contracts or even a national GPO contract that your customers could access, what advice do you give to a supplier to start to actually drive contract uptake so they can see the results of that contracting effort?
Well, I guess we view it as that some of the services that we provide, it's all around education. So we then educate and we provide forums for suppliers to educate our hospitals or our clients around the value from this new GPO contract. So we provide forums, et cetera, for that to happen. But again, since it's so much more than just the price, the suppliers really need to sort of get their arms around, okay, so what is the impact of their supply going to have on the other facets of the organization, sort of as we've talked about a lot, again, that quality and the outcomes. But there's going to need to be a lot of education, so I would ask suppliers just to be a little patient with us sometimes, because the Affordable Care Act is new to everybody. And, you know, and a year ago, we weren't even sure that it was going to be implemented. Until the Supreme Court came down and said yes that it will, and even today, honestly, right? So if you look at the Senate versus the House of Representatives, the Republicans want to, you know, take funding away from the Affordable Care Act so that a lot of the provisions don't get implemented. So I think that there are a number of organizations, whether it be hospitals or suppliers or have you, that are sort of taking a little bit of a wait and see, but this is moving forward, but we need to work together to do it, but suppliers are going to need to step up and hospitals are going to need to step up and figure it out together. So I would ask the suppliers to be a little patient with us as we sort of figure out how to find that intersection of cost, quality, and outcomes, and we might need from the suppliers. And this is a great way for a supplier that's on a new GPO contract to come in and to just truly to educate the supply chain execs in terms of how their product or their service will not only help them to reduce costs, the price points, but also to reduce overall costs for the facility as while at the same time improving the quality of care.
Got it. Great. Thank you, Chris.
So it's a different approach, if you will, instead of either leading solely, which I know was never the case, but sort of, you know, solely with price as their entree.
You know, I only have one more question for you, and before I do that, I'm going to ask you if you, or ask the listeners, if you do have any questions, now's a great time to submit them as we finalize our last few minutes here. And the question, the last question I have is, how often do you see suppliers, and what's the kind of review process? Do you have quarterly reviews, annual reviews, or and what are the things you're measuring them on? I'd love to just kind of hear your supplier interaction protocol and maybe kind of what are the core measurements you're looking at?
Well, it depends on the supplier for sure, right? And we also, we work very closely with our hospitals to get their input in terms of is the supplier meeting the needs of the facilities, et cetera. But we also have sort of a practical way that we take a look at sort of in the aggregate, like are the suppliers successful? So if we take a look at a contract, let's just call it a premier contract as an example. So if we know what, if you take a look at Premier's entire volume and we take a look at what our entire volume is and our volume as a percentage of their entire volume, that our suppliers and our contract should typically line up with that. And if they don't, then we then take a look at, well, why is that? Why is it that it's either significantly lower or higher than our percentage of what we typically are within Premier? And again, then it goes back to education in terms of, well, do we collectively need to do a better job of educating our members, our customers, in terms of the value that's being brought to bear by the suppliers? Or if it's significantly higher, then how do we take sort of those best practices and then use those with other suppliers in terms of, you know, in terms of mirroring that? So that's sort of at the big high level. But we also, with our strategic suppliers, have conference calls in terms of how can we bring, and it's all about value, how can we together bring that value to our hospitals. So we work very collaboratively with suppliers to bring the value to the hospitals.
Great. With that, Chris, I want to thank you for your time. You're always very articulate and insightful, and I do thank you. You're always generous with your time and go through the questions and always available for the magazine, and I do appreciate that. So hopefully me or ANA somehow can return the favor in kind. So thank you very much for your time. And with that, I'd like to send it back to Alicia to conclude today's call. Thank you, Chris.
Great. Thanks, John.
Great. Thanks so much to all the ANA members for listening in today, and a special thank you to Chris and John for your willingness to join and to share with us today. So thanks so much for being here, and everyone have a great day.